If you like what you see, please like and share the video, and subscribe to the channel, turning on all notifications. If you would like to support this channel in any way, please do so through Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the description. You can also like and follow us on Facebook. The link for that is also in the description. Now, I would like to say right off the bat that this is not going to be a hit piece on sedevacantism, but rather a brief examination of sedevacantism as an American phenomenon. While it is true that sedevacantism is not exclusive to America, and by America I mean the Americas, and not just the United States, America is the stronghold and seems to be the origination point for sedevacantism, particularly in Mexico. To preface further, I would like to point out that I don't just believe what other people say about this or that group. I want to hear from the people who are in the group itself what they believe. And having done so, I feel the same about sedevacantism as I do about flat earthers. I used to think the whole thing was utterly ridiculous, but after having listened to the people in the group, I find that they aren't stupid, they have good reasons for believing what they believe, and they make some really good points that I can't refute. But at the end of the day, I've yet to see something that makes me say, that's it. And I doubt that I ever will, because I always think to myself there could be something that I'm not seeing, and I'm not qualified to say that this is true. But I hold nothing against those who believe this. They do so for their own reasons, and I find the subject a bit fascinating. First of all, let's define sedevacantism. What we are talking about is the original sedevacantism, the belief that the Catholic Church apostatized at the Second Vatican Council, creating a new religion and ceasing to be the Roman Catholic Church, while retaining the name, titles, vestments to a certain degree, and property of the Roman Catholic Church. As a result of this apostasy, there has not been a valid pope since Pius XII, or a lesser opinion, John XXIII. Thus, the chair of Peter is empty, or sedevacante in Latin. The new church created at Vatican II changed the formula for ordinations of priests and the consecration of bishops, which are invalid, meaning the men ordained and consecrated in the new rite are not actually priests and bishops, as well as the promulgating of a new mass, which is also invalid. I call this classic sedevacantism. It is important to distinguish this from a new form of sedevacantism, which believes, for various reasons, that Pope Francis was not a valid pope, and perhaps Leo XIV. However, those people do not object to Vatican II, the new rites, and the new mass, and they believe all of the popes up to Francis were valid. So when I say sedevacantism or sedevacantist, I'm not talking about these people, but rather the original or classic sedevacantism described above. These people do not want to be called sedevacantists, nor do the sedevacantists recognize them. Now, like I said, the origination point for sedevacantism seems to be Mexico. The earliest examples is from a group of traditional Catholics in Mexico associated with the secret society Los Ticos, based in Guadalajara, and their spiritual director, Father Joaquin Sanze. A Jesuit priest in 1965, shortly after the Second Vatican Council, at a private meeting, Los Ticos leaders proposed the motion that Paul VI was a crypto-Jew and an illegitimate pope, and that this line should be officially adopted as the position for Mexican traditionalists. But other traditional Catholic groups in Mexico rejected the idea. While the SSPX is not a sedevacantist group, it is impossible to deny the role it played in the formation of American sedevacantism. Archbishop Marcelo Febvre started the Society of St. Pius X as a traditionalist seminary, rejecting the novelties that came out of the Second Vatican Council, including religious liberty, false ecumenism, collegiality, the new rites of ordination and consecration, and especially the new mass. The SSPX eventually set up chapels and mass centers throughout the world so that the laity could receive the sacraments and mass and teaching as it was prior to Vatican II. Since the SSPX was really the only game in town, it became a catch-all for anyone who had issues with the changes as a result of Vatican II in the 70s and early 80s. Also, the theories of Sedevacantism were forming at the same time, so it's not surprising that a large portion of the Sedevacantist movement would come out of the SSPX. In fact, it is said by some of those Sedevacantists who came out of the SSPX that Archbishop Lefebvre himself considered the possibility of Sedevacantism until he decided against it and kicked all the Sedevacantists out of the Society of St. Pius X, which brings me to the Nine. The Nine are United States American SSPX priests, many of whom were kicked out of the SSPX while the others followed, who would become some of the most important figures in the American Sedevacantist movement, including Father, now Bishop Donald Sanborn, Father William Jenkins, then Father, later Bishop Daniel Dolan, Father Anthony Chicata, and then Father, later Bishop Clarence Kelly. These priests were kicked out of the SSPX for the Sedevacantist views, yes, but also refusing to accept diocesan annulments and refusing to use the 1962 missal, which Archbishop Lefebvre had eventually imposed as the missal to be used throughout the society. The 1962 missal was put out by John the 23rd, and if you don't believe John the 23rd was a real pope, then you're not going to recognize a missal that he put forth as valid either. It makes sense. These exiled priests would go on to form their own priestly society, the Society of St. Pius V. It is important to point out that the Society of St. Pius V is not necessarily a Sedevacantist organization. Sedevacantism is allowed, and it's more of an open question. Some of those associated with the Society are Sedevacantists, while others are unsure. It's doubtful in my mind that anyone associated with them isn't a Sedevacantist to some degree, but I could be wrong. While Archbishop Lefebvre named his priestly society after the Pope who declared war on modernism, Pope Pius X, to show his commitment to resist the errors of modernism, these priests named their priestly society after the Pope who canonized the Mass of the Council of Trent, Pope Pius V, presumably to show their rejection of the 1962 Missal, which in their eyes deviated too far from the bull of Pius V quo primum. With the new SSPV established, these priests had a huge problem. In order for the society to continue after the deaths of these men, they needed a bishop to ordain future priests. They initially sought Bishop de Castermeyer, who told them to seek out Archbishop Tuck, who had just consecrated Michel-Louis Gérard de Laurier, whom we will discuss later, a bishop. The Tuck consecrations were scandalous, to say the least, and some considered them doubtful. De Castermeyer assured the men of the SSPV that de Laurier was an expert in such matters, and if there was anything doubtful, he would know and would not consider himself a valid bishop. So the SSPV decided to look into the Tuck consecrations to see if it would be right for them, a decision that would tear the SSPV apart. To make a long story short, the SSPV officially rejected the Tuck consecrations and do not see them as valid. And on October 19, 1993, in Carlsbad, California, the United States Bishop Mendez Gonzalez consecrated Clarence Kelly, one of the Nine, to the episcopacy for the SSPV. By Mendez's wishes, the consecration was kept secret until after his death in 1995. Kelly founded the Congregation of St. Pius V to replace the SSPV once those priests are deceased. Several of the priests of the SSPV did not agree with the rejection of the Tuck line and left the SSPV. Fathers Daniel Dolan and Donald Sanborn left and received episcopal consecration through the Tuck line, while Father Anthony Chicata left but remained a priest. Archbishop Nguyen Dinh Tuc was the Bishop of Hue in the Republic of Vietnam. While he was in Rome attending the Second Vatican Council, the 1963 South Vietnamese coup overthrew and assassinated his younger brother, Nguyen Dinh Diem, who was the president of South Vietnam. Tuc desperately wanted to return to Vietnam, but wasn't allowed to do so. Bishop Tuc believed that he was prevented from returning to Vietnam by Pope Paul VI at the request of the CIA. Regardless, Archbishop Tuc found himself in exile in Europe. It is claimed that due to the volatile situation in Vietnam, Pope Pius XI gave Archbishop Tuc extraordinary authority to ordain priests and consecrate bishops at will, without prior approval from Rome or any other authority, and that this privilege had never been revoked. Archbishop Took ordained several priests and consecrated several bishops for what would become the schismatic Palmarian Catholic Church, an act he later regretted. Archbishop Took would later consecrate two bishops that would solidify the American Sedevacantist movement, Michel Louis Gerard de Laurier and Moses Carmona. The majority of Sedevacantist bishops traced their episcopal consecration to one of these two men. Now, here's a little sidebar about Archbishop Took. When he died, he was buried in Resurrection Cemetery in Springfield, Missouri. I live in Springfield, Missouri, and the cemetery is not far from my house. But then his body was moved to Park Cemetery in Carthage, Missouri. My mother is from Carthage, Missouri, and both of her parents, my grandparents, are buried in that same cemetery. So I decided to visit their graves and see if I could find Archbishop Took's grave. Okay, so it took me a minute to find it. But here is Archbishop Took's grave, right there. CMRI is an acronym of Latin words, the English equivalent being the Congregation of Mary Immaculate Queen. The largest group of Sedevacantist priests is the CMRI. Similar to the SSPX, the CMRI priests travel around the world giving the traditional mass sacraments and teaching. Bishop Mark Pervarunas is its current head. The CMRI was started by Francis Conrad Marie Schutkart and Robert Dennis Chicoin, who attracted followers through international speaking tours as part of the Blue Army of Our Lady of Fatima. Schutkart was ordained a priest and consecrated a bishop by Daniel Quilter Brown from October 28th to November 1st in 1971 at a motel in Chicago in front of 40 witnesses. Brown had been consecrated a bishop in 1969 by Hubert A. Rogers, a bishop of the North American Old Roman Catholic Church, but he left and became independent in 1971. In 1983, Schutkart and others were expelled from the CMRI for immoral behavior. Following the expulsion of Schutkart, Sedevacantist Bishop George Muzzi of the Took line conditionally readministered the sacraments imparted by Schutkart, whose validity was now considered dubious, and conditionally reordained the remaining priests. In 1986, the congregation held its first general chapter, which established its rule and constitutions, which were later approved by Sedevacantist Bishop Robert McKenna. In August 1989, Father Pivarunas, Mark Pivarunas, was elected Superior General of the Congregation. On February 1st, 1991, Sedevacantist Bishop Moses Carmona expressed his desire to consecrate as bishop whomever the congregation chose. On 3rd April 1991, Pivarunas was elected to be consecrated a bishop, and on September 24th, 1991, in Mount St. Michael, Pivarunas was consecrated a bishop by Bishop Carmona. So how can these groups operate when they are in clear violation of the Code of Canon Law, even the 1917 Code of Canon Law? Well, the SSPX claims supply jurisdiction. The salvation of souls is the highest law, and given the current situation in the church on the human level, the divine church supplies jurisdiction. However, the argument is a little different for the Sedevacantists, since the Sedevacantists do not see the church hierarchy as being intact as the SSPX does. They claim epikaia. Now, the reality is the SSPX and Sedevacantists both claim supply jurisdiction and epikeia, but the emphasis seems to be on supply jurisdiction for the SSPX and epikeia for the Sedevacantists. So what is epikeia? Well, my understanding of it is this. There is a divine law, the moral law, and human law. Human law serves the other two. In other words, it is meant to enforce the moral and divine law. For example, murder is against the moral law, therefore human law also forbids murder and imposes penalties on those who commit murder. However, while the divine and moral law are perfect, human law is not. And sometimes human law, not able to see every possibility, actually conflicts with the moral or divine law. For example, let's say the speed limit is 30 miles per hour. We are bound by the moral law to obey the speed limit since it is designed to prevent accidents. But let's say my wife is in labor and needs to get to the hospital as soon as possible. The human law of 30 miles per hour is suspended because the moral law says I need to get my wife to the hospital fast. In other words, what is the spirit of the law, or what would the author of the law, God, want in this situation? Canon law is human law, and with the absence of a pope and proper hierarchy, would Jesus want the ordination of priests and the consecration of bishops and the mass and the sacraments given to the faithful? While the obvious answer would be yes, there are those who say no. There's a whole section of sedevacantists who believe this is all a waste of time because canon law is still in force. They believe all traditional clergy are illicit and evil, and it is a mortal sin to receive the sacraments from them. They often quote the Council of Trent, which says, "This holy synod teaches, furthermore, that those who, by their own temerity, take these offices upon themselves are not ministers of the church, but are to be regarded as thieves and robbers who have not entered by the door." Canon 7 says, if anyone says that those who have been neither rightly ordained nor sent by ecclesiastical and canonical authority, but come from a different source, are lawful ministers of the word and of the sacraments, let him be anathema. They stay home on Sunday, pray the rosary, baptize and catechize their children, and that's pretty much it. They are often referred to as home aloneers. The two most prominent promoters of the home alone position are Jerry Matetics and possibly the Diamond Brothers of the Most Holy Family Monastery, although I'm not really sure where the Diamond Brothers fit into all this. They're kind of an anomaly. They are actually two cousins who left Protestantism for Catholicism and fell into sedevacantism, setting up their own unique brand with no connection to the others. There is an alternative theory to sedevacantism called sedeprivationism, and some who are considered sedevacantists are actually sedeprivationists. Sedeprivationism comes from the thesis called Cessationum by Michel-Louis Gerard de Laurier, which proposes that the post-Vatican II popes are popes in the material sense, but not formally. They have no authority or jurisdiction unless they denounce the errors of Vatican II and return the church to its proper state. Essentially, they reign but do not rule. So how did this happen? How were the modernists able to take over the church in one stroke? Well, one theory is called the Siri theory, and it goes like this.
Now, it is a fact that on the first day of casting ballots for the 1958 conclave,
that white smoke bellowed out of the chimney indicating the election of a new pope, only to be followed by black smoke shortly after, indicating no pope was elected. And then later, white smoke again, and Cardinal Roncalli came out of the conclave as John XXIII, the very pope who would call for the Second Vatican Council. The reason white smoke came out only to be followed by black smoke, according to this theory, is because the very conservative Cardinal Siri had actually been elected the new pope. However, Freemasons threatened him, and he decided not to accept. So they elected John XXIII. Since the newly elected pope, Siri, declined because of threats, it invalidates the entire conclave. Thus, John XXIII was an invalid pope. Now, here's the thing about the Siri theory. How do we know that Cardinal Siri was elected? The only possible answer is that someone at the conclave said so. Okay, who? I wanted to know what the source for this was, so I searched the sedevacantist channels on YouTube and found that they don't actually believe this, and in fact, they discourage belief in the Siri theory among their followers. So most sedevacantists don't actually believe this, but there are a few here and there that do. Okay, why? What is the source for this? Leave it in the comments or send me a link. Well, there you have it. That's all I know about sedevacantists and sedevacantism. I'm sure I did not do the subject justice, got a few things wrong, and left a few things out. And for that, I do apologize. But I did my best to bring a little understanding to a very misunderstood movement within the Catholic Church. And that's how I see it. Until my next video, God bless.